All right. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
Absolutely. So as far as earliest childhood memories, what are we getting into as a kid?
So I became vegan at 13, but before that, I was chubby as a kid. I ate the standard American diet. My parents never really, I wouldn't even say they remotely cared about health. They were always smokers. So I had a very like standard upbringing when it came to health, you know, compared to most families. So I would say, again, I mentioned I was chubby as a kid. Around 11, I was starting to become more self-conscious. I remember being in health class and we watched the movie Super Size Me. And it honestly really affected me in the sense that I really started to get concerned about developing those health issues that it talks about as time goes on, like heart disease and cancer, et cetera. And so I decided I wanted to lose weight from those like concerns developing about health.
Going back a little bit earlier, do you remember like playing sports, more academic? What was like elementary school like for you?
I never was interested in playing sports. I've always been more into like books and like fiction. Like I've always loved stuff like that over sports.
Mm-hmm. And when we were growing up, kind of still around that young age, were we playing outside a lot? Were our parents strict on like where we were, what we were allowed to do? Or
yeah, so my parents have never been very strict, but when I was a kid, I had like the normal rules. Like I couldn't leave my property when I would go outside and play, but I did spend a lot of time outside as a kid. You bring up a good point because I wasn't active in school per se, but I did do a lot of active stuff outside my house. Like I loved to skateboard and rollerblade. As a kid, I was always outside playing and like running around and stuff.
Yeah. When you bring up rules, I remember like leaving property, my mom used to make me put a rubber band on my wrist. So when I was going to my friend's house two blocks away, I would remember to call. And without fail, I would always forget to call. But my friend's mom would be like, "Don't you need to call your mom?" I was like, "Oh, yeah." So when you were playing with like kids and stuff like that, is that just like around your neighborhood? Was it friends and family? What was going on there?
Yeah, it was usually friends from around the neighborhood, or it was like school friends. So we would either, you know, go to each other's houses after school.
So
we were always outside.
And then as far as books goes, when did you find yourself becoming a fan of books?
So as a kid, I always felt kind of like an outcast. And I would say like as around 8 or 9, I started to kind of like, not like withdraw, like I had friends and stuff, but I started to become more interested in like introverted hobbies. Like I love to draw, I love to read. So I would say that was around like 8 or 9 started to really develop.
And was there anybody you're like, "Hey, I want to be like that," or that's just something that became more enjoyable for you to do?
What was that? What was the question?
As far as like doing the introverted type activities, was there an artist you're like, "Hey, I think I can do that," or just by doing those activities, you liked them a little bit more?
I think I just started to develop like a liking for those on my own. But I will say this wasn't necessarily when I was 8. It was when I was a tiny bit older because I didn't read this book series until then. But the Twilight book series is what really got me into reading, shamefully. But yeah, so I'm guessing I read that when I was around 12. And that was really what made my love for books take hold.
Okay, so I've definitely watched the movies. I had an older sister. She breezed through those books. She's like, "Hey, we got to watch this movie." So, I mean, movies were captivating. They followed the regular structure. What did you like so much about the books when you were reading them?
You know, it was when I was so young, before like I ever had any form of relation, like a romantic relationship. And I really think that was what was so appealing to me, that it was like this relationship between like a mortal person and like a supernatural like vampire. That was definitely like the biggest allure.
So at what point, because for me, when I was watching, I was like, "Just turn her, like that's just turn her right away." Like, I feel like there would be no negative.
Yeah. Well, I think that a part of it too was that, like, now I've tried to go back and read those books and I can't anymore. Yeah. Like, my, it's just way, I'm like way beyond the reading level, I guess, now. But
yeah,
back then I did really identify with Bella, the main character, like going and living in a new town and like having right. no friends. And I think a lot of girls related to her in that mm-hmm. sense. And that was definitely a part of what drew me into that book series.
Okay, so we're coming more of who we are in middle school or whatnot. What did a day look like for you in middle school? What did you look forward to? What were you not so keen on?
So middle school was when, I don't even know if I did mention this before, but I had an eating disorder, got like right at the beginning of going into middle school.
Okay.
So I was dealing with that. I had anorexia. I feel like I want to say it did take place during the summer, though, because when I started middle school, I remember I was like starting to try to cope and like deal with those issues, having like recovered somewhat. So, I mean, I would go to school. I did actually get into sports kind of because of the eating disorder, like
okay.
feeling like I needed to do some kind of physical activity. So I started running track. I was reading a lot. I did see friends on occasion, but that was still, you know, when I was like in middle school. So it was really very up to my parents if right. I did go to a friend's house after school. So it was, I would say that like my time in middle school was normal compared to most kids, but that mental health aspect of like having the eating disorder was totally, a large part of my life at that point and was like affecting my eating habits and the way I was looking at food. I don't quite think I was vegan yet, but it was a big like damper on my like mental health at the time.
So day, is there a day one where, hey, now I have an eating disorder? Is it something that built up? Like what was it for you?
It was totally something that developed over time that I denied until the very end, until it was absolutely clear that I had an eating disorder. So I would say like right at the beginning of middle school for me, that was when I decided I want to lose 20 pounds. And I felt like I found the magic key of losing weight when I learned about calories. And this was just from like researching bad advice online on how to lose weight. Cause I had a laptop at the time. I remember I was insistent on wanting a laptop, and that was like one of the biggest like gifts I got for Christmas back then when I was around like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm. So when you say like calories, was there, it was just saying, hey, if you want to lose weight, you need to eat less calories, do this. Or like, what do you remember thinking at that time?
Yeah. So I remember that I was having some trouble. I was starting to work out more on my own. Like I remember I had DDR, which if you're not familiar, okay. Yeah. You're familiar. It's like a dance game, and it actually was really good cardio. So I started to play that. I probably just started doing like other like home workouts, and I started to try to eat healthier. But again, this was when I was like 12 years old. So
right.
I didn't necessarily have a large, like, you know, body of research to draw on to decide how to eat healthier, but I just tried to do what I could, what I like knew just in general would help. And I was having trouble. So I must've found some website or some article online that talked about calories. And that was when it clicked in my head. Okay, well, if I eat less calories, I'll lose weight. And that was like when the obsession started to develop of like learning how many calories are in everything. And I foolishly started reducing the amount of food I was eating down to like eating like 300 to 500 calories a day.
That's where
the eating disorder kicked in, because I did that for about 6 months. And obviously I lost way too much weight. I got like super underweight. And finally, what woke me up, and again, this was still when I was about 12, it all took place in like the really severe period of time that it happened, took place for about 6 months. So I remember at like the worst of it, my mom finally brought me to the doctor, and yeah. they, you know, diagnosed me with an eating disorder at the doctor. And they told me, you know, because they like did all these tests, if you don't start eating like normally again, you're going to die. Like my heart had slowed down
right.
to a very, my heart rate was very slow, basically.
those are like Minnesota starvation study numbers that you're eating at there.
Yeah.
That's low. So how was your mental state as far as, did your hunger cues just go away, or what was going on at that time?
I would not say that they went away. I feel like maybe I was definitely ignoring them. It was more so mentally, the sense that like I never stopped thinking about food. I remember my favorite thing to do during that period of time was watch recipe videos. I would watch the Food Network all the time. Yeah. So I was always thinking about food as a way to cope with not eating it.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't remember always being plagued by this like intense feeling of hunger. I want to say that I had constant cravings, but the hunger did go away after I'd been eating like this super low amount of food every day for, you know, like more than a month.
Yeah, I think it's the Minnesota starvation study, but they had people that would fast, and then they had people that were eating 300 to 500 calories, and they saw the people that were eating 300 to 500 calories would just obsess over food. Like they'd see the magazines, the so on and so forth, but the people that were just fasting, like the urges went away because their body's like, nope, I'm not getting anything. So moving forward from there, what did you think when the doctor told you that? When he said, hey, this is not going to end well for us?
That woke me up. And it made me realize I needed to start eating like normally again. I've always been very stubborn. So I remember my mom did get me go to a nutritionist, but she also wanted me to see a psychologist. And I was like hell bent on not seeing the psychologist. So I was supposed to, but I say that to essentially, point out that I was kind of dealing with the mental health aspects of it on my own and kind of just doing my best to start to get better. The nutritionist did help me because she helped me kind of plan out like a balanced diet. And I think this was when I did start to go vegan also, but obviously she didn't say anything bad about that because I don't remember her saying that. So she helped me plan out like a more balanced diet and made me realize that I could eat like a normal amount of calories, like whatever it was, like 1800, or I was a teenager at the time, so it's probably more than that.
Yeah.
But she helped me start to realize you could eat a lot more and not like just gain a ton of weight, and you could be like healthy and functioning eating a lot more than I was eating.
How was she able to convey that? Because like a lot of people, if you see someone that's not eating enough, you're like, eat more, you'll feel better, it's good for you. Like it's more than just a couple sentences that get people to realize it.
She gave me these detailed meal plans, and I actually remember I followed them pretty closely, and that was what started to help me get back to a normal weight and helped me initially learn to like eat normally again. Because after a period of time where you go through something like that, like you almost forget how to eat normally. So that was what started to put me back on track, but it obviously wasn't like all sunshine and rainbows and like going right just right off the bat. Like I remember I dealt with binge eating at the time too. And I just dealt with this like low self-esteem and depression because of the mental tax on what I was going through emotionally. Absolutely.
What do you feel like your self-talk was like through that time when you started getting a nutritionist? You're putting on weight, you know it's good for you, but obviously our brain's still having some problems.
I just remember feeling very low, and I've always had this like all or nothing kind of mindset. So I felt like, I hate to say it because it just sounds really bad, but I felt very like worthless at the time. And like, I felt very stuck in those habits. And like, you know, if I can't hold on to this, like perceived, like perfect body image, which I don't even know, like your mind becomes so warped when you go through something like that, because now I can look back and know that when I was like 85 pounds, I could not have looked the way that I was thinking.
How tall were you?
I'm 5'1", and I was probably still around the same height back then because I like stopped growing when I was like 12, probably because of restricting calories that much.
Might not have helped.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, back then when I was really depressed and I was going through this time in my life where I had to start eating, like attempting to eat a normal amount of calories again, I just remember feeling very low and like, well, if I can't like hold on to my eating disorder, then like, you know, like who am I? And I was going through a lot of just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So through middle school, did we then transition into veganism, or where did that transition happen?
I would say it happened like 6 months to a year after I started to recover from my eating disorder.
Yeah.
I was at I don't know if you're familiar, but I was at the Vans Warped Tour, and they have, it's like a, it used to be like a punk rock concert where there were like multiple stages set up, and then the whole parking lot would be merch booths. So okay. It would be like where the bands sell merch. And one of the tents that was set up was PETA tent.
Oh,
and
no.
That was my first introduction to veganism. I think I was obviously familiar with what vegetarianism was.
Yeah.
And I think I was starting to gravitate towards vegetarianism by that time, but this introduced me to veganism, where you can stop eating meat and dairy. And then that excludes like a ton of processed foods and just foods like, you know, if I go to an event, like I could just easily say, I wouldn't want to eat that because it's not vegan. Like it opened me up to the possibility of that. And I will say, even as like a young child, I wanted to be a vet. I've always loved animals. So that was totally a part of it for me. So essentially when I was given these flyers at this PETA tent, and then I went home and I watched Earthlings that day, the ethical aspects of veganism really, you know, moved me to want to become vegan, and the health aspects of it, because I really had drilled into my head that meat and dairy were what was causing people's health issues, especially from watching movies like Super Size Me and stuff. So both of those points sold me on veganism. And I was, because I have this like all or nothing mindset, able to do it overnight. Like I remember, I really think I did become vegan overnight after that.
I mean, they have a very good playbook. Like, hey, if this happens, we're going to use this. We're going to streamline you in this position. They got a good thing going there. As far as the mindset goes, do you think it was a positive thing when we started doing it? How do you feel like it had a good mindset change, or what was going on?
You mean in terms of like mental health and emotionally?
Yes. Yeah.
I was still dealing. I would say my eating disorder had gotten like maybe 50% better by that time, but I was still dealing with like feelings of depression and feeling very low.
Yeah.
So I just remember kind of feeling like I don't remember my mood or my emotional state improving. I feel like as time went on and I like acclimated to eating a vegan diet, things kind of just leveled out, and I did start to eat like a normal amount of calories every day. So in that sense, things improved because I was just, I was feeling a little better, but I never remember feeling like the way I feel now on an animal-based diet.
Yeah.
Back then, I dealt with, you know, feeling, I dealt with low self-esteem that kind of would improve based on circumstances a little bit sometimes, but it would always dip again. I dealt with mental and brain fog. I dealt with energy issues, like, you know, like eating and like just still never having energy, like feeling like I wanted to take a nap after I ate. There was never a time as a vegan that I remember not dealing with those issues. I think a lot of it was denial and wanting to believe that it was this healthy diet that just made me ignore all of those things.
Right.
And believe that I actually was like healthy and thriving, which it's so laughable now to think that I did feel that way at one time.
So going through that, so we're in middle school, we go to the Warped Tour. Was that in high school that we went to that?
That was in middle school.
Okay.
I would say towards like the end of middle school was when I became vegan.
Okay. So we're transitioning into high school. other than the eating and stuff like that, are we traveling much? Do we have like a career path that we want to head down, or what's going on in our life?
I felt very, I don't want to say lost, but at the same time, I feel like because of the way I was eating, because I was starting, like, because I went from restricting calories to being vegan, it just influenced my mood and the way I was feeling about everything in my life. So I always wanted to be an author. So again, like, it was a lot of introverted activities for me. I love to write. I still do. I love to draw and stuff, but I was never interested in like being an artist. I did start to see my friends a little bit more as time went on. Like as I started high school again, I started dating my first boyfriend. So we had a group of friends. So I did start spending more time with my friends, and that actually also made me want to start eating normally again, just so I could like go out with my friends and like feel like a normal person. But as much as I wanted that, it never really like truly happened.
But that's what you were thinking at that time. And I think a lot of people that are in that situation want to be eating meat. They want to partake, but for certain reasons, one way or another, they do not.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was almost like my compromise where I felt like I'll just eat whatever amount I want, but it'll just be vegan. So like I'll go with my friends to a restaurant, I'll get something vegan and just try not to like be so so like OCD about the amount of food I'm eating.
Yeah.
And you know, so I always wanted to feel like a normal person amongst them, but I never did because I still had this mental health thing going on that as much as it improved, it was still there.
Yeah. As far as the mental health part goes, what do you think you would have, or what would you have wanted to hear while you're going through this period of your life?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like just if I had known that it would get better eventually and that there was a way of eating, I mean, I guess that's where the conflict comes in, because if somebody had presented to me, like there is a way of eating where you can feel so much better and not have to truly worry about how much you eat really, because it's like satiating. That's what I would have wanted to hear. But at the same time, I wouldn't have been ready for the message that, oh, like it's not veganism though. It's basically the opposite thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like just, if I, you know, had a way of finding out from someone that it would get better eventually, that really would have helped at the time.
Yeah. Sean Baker comes out of the clouds and says,
yeah,
here's a steak.
Yeah.
So at what point do we, so we're going through high school. We want to be writing. Is there any particular like person you want to write? Like, do you have a mentor for writing or what's going on there?
It was Stephanie Meyer for a while, the woman who wrote Twilight. She really was reading those books. Really got me into the mindset of being able to write. Like it really developed that voice in my head that I needed to write. But weirdly enough, I don't know if you would even be familiar with this, but there was this author, Graham Hancock,
who the name sounds familiar.
he doesn't write fiction really. He's a nonfiction author who like has this book called Fingerprints of the Gods, who wrote this book like basically proposing the existence of Atlantis. And regardless of like, because that's obviously a huge conspiracy, like I don't even want to get into that. I just found it like fascinating.
Does he do like 8-hour long podcasts and YouTube videos?
Yeah, he's been on Joe Rogan multiple times.
I'm like the name sounds familiar. You said Atlantis. I'm like, I think I know who this guy is.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so I don't even know how I came across this book, but I read it and I was like fascinated by it. And that was, so I've written two books. Only one of them is published right now, but the premise of it is not Atlantis, but like a lost civilization that I made up. And that was what really inspired me to want to write that book. Initially it was Fingerprints of the Gods. And then
what's the name of your book?
It's called Finding Enevra, and Enevra is it's a made up word. And that's where the made up lost civilization comes in, but it centers around like three friends who have like superpowers that like have a connection to the civilization.
I don't want to jump too far ahead, but tell me about the process of writing a book. Like, I have a hard time writing like a paper for school, and like it's just an outline and then you go.
Right. So it's funny that it inevitably comes up when I talk about my past, because it actually like ties into the eating disorder, and it ties into what I'm sure I'll get to, where I had ulcerative colitis as a vegan, because I felt like during the first initial time that I got really sick with the eating disorder, I had to kind of like take a break for a few months from like going out. And it was a really introspective time because I was so sick and I did have to stay home for the most part and just kind of like be alone with myself. And it was also because I was kind of isolating myself willingly because of the eating disorder. So that was all of that to say, that was when I initially wrote this like 17 chapter manuscript. And it was totally like, you could have been able to tell a 13-year-old wrote it, but it was where I developed the premise for the book that I came to write years later. So again, I'm sure I'll get into this more deeply, but I developed ulcerative colitis as a vegan. And this was when I was about 23. So it was probably about 5 years ago now. I was really sick and I had to take about 4 or 5 months off work. And I decided to go back to this original manuscript that I'd written and start rewriting it. So essentially, like, I took the basic premise and I took a few key scenes from that, but I, for the most part, rewrote it. And it took me about like 4 months to actually like really like write the whole thing, but it was because I had so much time at the time. And I got into it and I just didn't stop.
Wow. That's wild. All right. So we're moving back. So we're in high school. I know you mentioned your parents were smokers. When did you realize that smoking is not a good thing?
I feel like I intuitively always knew it. Even as a kid, like, I remember my parents always told me and my brother too, like, they tried to let us not really be around them when they were smoking, and they always made it clear that this isn't good. But at the same time, if me and my brother developed a smoking habit when we got older, they wouldn't have been there to like stop us.
Right.
So we knew just from our parents saying that, we knew from other family members. My grandma, when I was a kid, always tried to make it like super clear that it was not healthy. And like, thankfully, me and my brother both, neither of us ever even, I've never even smoked a cigarette. And I don't think my brother has either. And that was just, you know, a personal choice. I've had friends that did it. And I luckily was never tempted, which is usually not the case. I know a lot of people whose parents smoke, they end up taking up the habit because of that.
Yeah. So looking from our parents' perspective or grandparents' perspective, why do you think smoking was such a big thing? Like, how do you think everyone was doing it?
Oh, you mean like years ago?
Yeah. So like, if you were looking from your parents' perspective, like, why do you think, even though they didn't want you to do it, why do you think they did it and like, and stuff like that?
Totally just out of habit. And because I think that when they were growing up, it wasn't seen as something that was so bad. I think it was much more normalized when they were growing up, and it was just a habit that as time went on, they just never found the will to break, but they still smoke to this day. So,
Hey, yeah. Still around though. That's good.
Yeah. 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 Luckily, they've been fine.
Yeah. Hey, that's good to hear. So, in high school, we're moving forward at that point. I guess middle school is the when we're 13. But where's our life going while we're going through high school?
Just a lot of like I said before, feeling very lost because I was still dealing with just like low self-esteem issues. I did honestly just spend a lot of time with my friends. And I was honestly like very confused about what I wanted to do with my life, because I think that this was very practical advice a lot of people were giving me, but everybody in my life was telling me like, you can't be an author. Like, it's never going to work out. And to be fair, that's not like my job, but I did like publish my book at least.
Yeah.
So people made me very discouraged. Like, adults in my life made me feel very discouraged. And I was kind of trying to figure out like, okay, well, this is obviously not like a reliable for like job when I get out of high school, like, what can I even do? And I went back and forth with a lot of things. I did go to a community college when I got out of high school for a few years because I was still confused. But then I ended up going to FIT because I thought I wanted to be like the Fashion Institute of Technology.
Gotcha.
I thought I wanted to do like fashion merchandising, and it was something that like I was just kind of like settling on because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So yeah. I've always like wanted to just be an author, but it's like finding the things that I'm like, I still enjoy doing that aren't necessarily that. So that was basically what high school was for me. Just like, I hung out with my friends a lot. I did do track for the first like 2 years of high school. And then I just kind of like lost interest.
What'd you run in track?
Oh, I don't even remember. I remember doing a lot of like the field stuff. Yeah.
Shot, disc and whatnot. Did you guys have javelin?
Yeah, we did. I kind of remember that. I definitely did it like at least once.
That's fun. Yeah. Our school, I think we did have pole vault, but yeah, we didn't have javelin, and I had a friend over in Pennsylvania that he's like, yeah, I'm throwing javelin. I was like, man, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Just throwing this massive stick.
Yeah.
So we'll say senior year, are at that point, are the counselors saying you have to pick a place? Have you already picked the community college?
I remember I didn't even see my counselor too much. I had a lot of conversations with her about how I wanted to be an author. I was being like very stubborn at the time. I was not the most pleasant student and like late high school. But I remember because like I really stopped caring about school during the last 2 years. So I did kind of just settle on the community college. And I kind of just decided like senior year, I'm going to go to community college and try to like figure out what I want to do from there. And then luckily, like I was really happy when I did get into FIT. I honestly didn't think I would because it's one of the biggest fashion schools in I think the world. And
where is that located at?
It's in New York City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought when I did get in, like, it was like my ticket to like, you know, having like a really amazing career and stuff. But then lo and behold, I really like, I did not enjoy it when I did go.
Mm-hmm. So is that away from home? Are you staying in dorms? What's going on there?
I commuted. So I live on Long Island and okay. The city is like an hour train ride. I always commuted. And then I worked on Long Island. So it was always like this back and forth kind of a thing.
How safe was that when you were commuting?
Honestly, so it was in 2019. I feel like the city has gotten like exponentially worse since then. Like I think I graduated at the right time because every once in a while would have like something happen with like a homeless person. They might like, they would come up to me every once in a while. Or one time a lady tried to whip me and my friend on a subway platform. So that happened. But for the most part, like that, those were very, very infrequent things.
Yeah.
I never really had to deal with like any really bad situations happening, but now I haven't been in the city full time for a few years and I have no interest at this point because of the stories that I've been hearing.
Yeah. No, I have some friends that have moved out and they're like, yep, not going there. Mm-hmm. But as far as going back to the counselor and you saying you're hard headed, if there was a place in which you were dealing, like talking to other authors and there was a possibility for like more or less like a trade school for authors and stuff like that, do you think that would have been something you would have enjoyed if that was an option?
Yeah, totally. I think that if I'd gotten more like relevant advice from people that like that worked in that space,
right,
it would have totally helped me at the time. And I just didn't have that resource, honestly, or I don't remember having it. And I did actually join a writer's club, but I feel like it was after I graduated high school. So okay. I just remember I didn't like expose myself to anything like that back in high school. I felt very like not standoffish, but I felt very like helpless at that time in my life. Like I didn't have any resources or like lifelines.
Yeah. I originally started this podcast to just like talk about like health and stuff like that. But now the more that I talk to people, our school system is failing us so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I totally agree.
And it's just like, I have people on that you were either homeschooled or private schooled. And then like they seem to be crushing it. And then I can't tell if it's the public school system, if it's the way that it's set up, if there's not enough teachers, if we're not paying people enough. But I feel like there's a couple things where school is like we really focused on STEM, I think. Or is that what it is? Science, technology. I apparently need to go back to school. Mathematics.
I know what you're talking about.
So like there's a certain few things that we're focused on, but I think a lot of people are getting left out, and like it doesn't just fill into this tight square that they're pushing us into.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that we're not really given the tools, taking out of the equation like private schools and homeschooling. When you just go to a state-run school, I feel like they don't give you the tools of like how to deal with emotions and how to develop like mental resolve and just like life skills. There's like no talk of that at all in school.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's interesting because now with the way the economy is right now, it's two parents are working. That's just what it is. Like we have to have that happen to just sustain living in a house.
Yeah.
But that's another check mark for we got to fix our school systems. So while you're going to the fashion school, did you develop a lot of vegan friends just like before then in general? How was that whole situation going?
I've always had a few friends who were vegan even before I did start at FIT. At FIT, I remember I did meet a few other girls who were vegan, but because I was always back and forth, like on Long Island and then in the city, I wasn't, I didn't really spend a lot of time with people at FIT. So it really has always just been like these one or two people that have been in my life for years that were vegan that I spent a lot of time with.
So when you guys like hang out, what's the conversation, if food does pop up, like, are you guys like, hey, like, I wish I could eat some meat, or like, because I'm not a vegan. I haven't been in those conversations. Usually I'm on the other side. So I don't know what those conversations look like.
So you mean before I stopped being vegan?
Correct. Yeah.
So it was always, because we live in New York, it's always been very easy to just go to a restaurant and get vegan food.
Yeah.
And again, too, I remember I had an old YouTube channel where I made vegan recipes, which is like so cringy to like look back at now. But with this one friend, I remember we did this whole recipe video once, and there was never I know a lot of people want to know, like, did you ever cheat? And I really don't remember. I never cheated with meat, but I would say like once, like early into veganism, I had milk because a friend put it in my cereal and I didn't want to just throw it out. And then I had half and half also a few years later, but it was again, like this one time instance. So with my friend, I remember she would even ask me every once in a while, you know, do you ever cheat? Do you ever have things that like aren't actually considered vegan, like ranch dressing? And I have always, especially with veganism, been like very meticulous. So like, If like a dressing was not vegan, I knew. So I never really made those mistakes. And I don't know if she was maybe asking because like every once in a while she did have animal products and she was kind of looking for validation to bring it up to me. Gotcha. But I was always honest because I never really did cheat in that way. And I don't know, in a way I wonder now, because I was actually so strict and because I did it to the team, maybe that was why I ended up getting so sick eventually, but that's just speculation.
So what was there anybody else in your group of friends that just like stopped being a vegan at some point, or did anybody in your community like say anything about it?
Online, I remember a few of the people that I watched throughout the years on YouTube stopped being vegan. Like there was the whole controversy with, oh my God, I don't even remember her name. I think her name was Raw Alignment, where she stopped being vegan and then started like the carnivore diet, which I thought was insane at the time. And then ironically, like kind of ended up following in the same footsteps. But online, I remember I was exposed to those people that did stop being vegan. And I just kind of, I didn't even really look into it.
Gotcha.
But then in my own personal life, I never had a friend who stopped being vegan. If anything, my experience now is probably like messing with my friend's view of veganism, because she has to be able to see how much healthier I've gotten since I was vegan. But if anything, the only thing I really dealt with criticism wise, or like that made me question it, was my coworkers at the time when I did get ulcerative colitis. They all like unanimously said, you know, you got ulcerative colitis because you're vegan. And I like resolutely denied it. I did not think it had anything to do with me getting ulcerative colitis, but lo and behold, it definitely did.
So do we go to the hospital? Do we go to a doctor? How do we figure out like that's the issue? And what were our symptoms?
So this was after I'd been a strict vegan for about 10 or 11 years. It was when I was at FIT and I was starting to work on my thesis, I think. So it was a very stressful time for me. And I remember in the beginning of the year, I was starting to develop like stabbing pain in my intestine after I would eat. I was starting to get a low fever on a daily basis. And I was starting to get like I would either be constipated or I would have diarrhea. And I was starting to get like a little bit of blood in my stool. So very like serious symptoms. But they weren't in the beginning of this year that this all took place. They were not very bad at the outset, obviously. So I remember at first I thought it was just hemorrhoids and I figured it would get better on its own. I would say like after 2 or 3 weeks, I knew that it wasn't going to get better on its own. And I knew it was indicative of some kind of more serious health issue. So I went to the doctor and I wasn't so sick that like, if I didn't go to the hospital at this time, I would have died, but they advised me to go to the ER because I think I needed fluids and stuff. And they said like, just go and get some tests done there and see what they say. So I went to the ER. I was admitted. I was in the ER for about, not the ER, sorry, the hospital. I was in the hospital for about 3 days and they did lot of tests.
Is this during COVID?
No. Oh my God. That would have been horrible. No, my family, my mom was there with me most of the time. And my fiance was also there. He was my boyfriend at the time. This was in 2017.
Okay.
So it was, thank God, because that would have, I can't even imagine if it was during COVID.
Yeah.
So they admitted me. I was there for about 3 days. They did a lot of tests and they determined that I had diverticulitis, which is when a seed gets stuck in your intestine and it forms a pocket of inflammation around that area. And I remember, I think there was this like one specific area, I guess in my colon or my intestine, that did have like a ton of inflammation. So that was what they determined. And it probably made sense at the time. So they put me on antibiotics. I got out of the hospital. They did want to do further tests, but by the time I was done, like figuring out that it was diverticulitis, it was starting to get into the warmer months. I do remember that. So I was supposed to go get more tests done. In the end, I just took the antibiotics and it did start to get better. But
so just to wind back just a hair, when you say there's inflammation, is that due to a seed getting stuck? Is that due to the diet? Like what's the inflammation come from?
I believed at the time, because of what the doctor told me, that it was because of like some particle of food that got stuck in my intestine.
Okay.
That was what made me sick and what formed the inflammation. The antibiotics were supposed to kill the infection and I guess like kill that area where there was inflammation. And it, you know, if that was the case and that was all that was going on, then I'm sure I would have just continually recovered. But lo and behold, it wasn't.
Gotcha.
So after I finished the antibiotics, though, I did feel better for a few months, like as better as I was going to feel being like a strict vegan. But then I remember in September, when I did start my next semester, the symptoms started to come back. And by, I want to say October, they were getting like severe, like worse than they ever had earlier in the year.
Yeah.
So I knew I could see where it was going, and I was starting to research my symptoms. And I basically knew I had ulcerative colitis before I was diagnosed. And so eventually I would say like mid October, maybe like early November, I went back to the hospital. I was admitted to the ER right away. And they did tell me like because I was having so much pain after I would eat, it had nothing to do with wanting to restrict calories anymore at this point. I literally like, I could only eat a very small amount of food usually before I would start to develop horrible gut pain and like stabbing pain. So I was not able to eat too much on a daily basis because of this. So because of the deficiencies and because of losing blood, I was told when I did go back to the hospital, if you hadn't come here when you did, you probably would have died. So I was very sick at the time. And so I was in the hospital that time for about 7 or 8 days. Again, I was put on fluids. They did a ton of tests, and that was where they determined that I had ulcerative colitis. They did a partial colonoscopy, and I guess they could see my entire colon had lesions and was inflamed. And, it was bad. And I remember they put me on prednisone towards the end of getting out of the hospital, and they had me on prednisone for about a month after that, after I got out of the hospital.
So what causes those lesions? Because I was told the vegan diet just cleans you out and it's just nice and smooth.
Yeah. So first of all, I was eating this product that had carrageenan in it, and carrageenan, from my own research, I found out that it actually does cause colitis in mammals. There's been tests that showed it caused colitis in rats. So first of all, I know that there were a few products I was eating with that in it. I think that was a part of what caused it.
When you say products, is this like a vegan specific product, or like, what do you mean by product?
So there was a vegan product called the vegan egg, which, again, like, I just shake my head now when I think about the fact that I ate those things, but it was a processed egg imitation.
Okay.
And it was a powder. So I can only imagine, basically carrageenan thickens something. So I'm sure it had a lot of this ingredient in it.
Okay.
Other than that, though, carrageenan is in a lot of just non-vegan, just regular food products. It's in like coffee creamer sometimes. It's in like cold cuts. It's in weird stuff that you wouldn't even necessarily expect.
Yeah.
So obviously I avoid that ingredient to this day. I will never eat it again. But I think that could have potentially been what set off the inflammation initially. But
okay.
There were so many other things, though, that would aggravate my gut as time went on. I think fiber in general started to just aggravate me, but beans, especially grains also. Really fibrous veggies like carrots also would always give me a ton of gut pain. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of like, what's the word? Like cruciferous vegetables and like, yep, beans, legumes. I'm sure nuts probably didn't help either.
So when you look at a average day when we're hitting like peak like calories and stuff like that, what did a day of eating look like for you?
When I was vegan?
Yeah.
I tended to have like oatmeal in the morning. So I would cut up like bananas. I would put almond milk in it, maple syrup probably. Or if I didn't have that, I would have like tofu scrambles a lot. So I would put like a lot of vegetables in them, like peppers, onions, mushrooms. And then I would scramble the tofu. I would put turmeric in it. I remember, especially towards the end of veganism, I was eating that a lot. And I know now it's because I was craving the real thing. Like, I wanted to actually eat eggs, but I just wouldn't allow myself to make that leap in my logic. I would eat those two things a lot in the morning. And then I did eat meat substitutes. So I would eat like Beyond Burgers. I've always kind of been like a brunch and dinner kind of person. So I would eat like two big meals a day. So usually like I would have like small snacks in the middle of the day probably, but then like for dinner, I would have like either Beyond Burgers or I would make like tofu again with vegetables. I would eat rice and potatoes and stuff. So that's like most of my diet was like healthy whole foods, but I did have some meat substitutes. And I felt like those were some of the only things that actually did make me feel satisfied on any level. And I did have protein shakes, or I would put protein powders in smoothies as well sometimes if I didn't want to make like oatmeal or whatever else for breakfast.
What kind of protein powder was it?
I always did try to minimize the amount of soy I was having. So it would always either be pea protein, or I did try hemp protein. Oh, okay. I want to say that a brand I would get a lot was called Vega. Mm-hmm. I tended to try to not buy soy based protein powders.
What do you think our best guess on a day of protein? How many grams of protein do you think on a good day you were getting?
Maybe like 80 grams.
Okay.
Maybe like a little less. Like I would say like probably 70 grams of protein.
Okay. There you go. That respectable. Tough to do when that's what we're eating.
I could be a little off, but I just remember going towards the end of me being vegan, I was eating a lot of beans. Like I remember Chipotle was one of my favorite foods to get. I was eating like Beyond Burgers and stuff like that a lot. I was eating like protein shakes. So I'm sure wasn't like at the highest end of protein, but it was like, it was probably more than like 50 grams a day.
Okay. All right, so we'll have one more vegan question, then we'll move forward.
Okay.
So when you are talking to someone that just eats meat regularly and they're like, hey, like the veganism thing doesn't make sense to you, what is your go-to on why people should be vegan?
Back then, so I was really convinced that it was the healthiest way to eat. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but I'd read books throughout my time as vegan, like the China study. And that really brainwashed me into believing that every health disease was because of meat and dairy. So I would always resort to that. Basically, I'd bring that up.
I argue there's a buddy of mine that I vehemently disagree with the China study book and the pot and whenever that gentleman talks, and it frustrates me very. So I'm trying to get through to him. So I'm definitely going to have to clip this.
Okay.
So why did you or when you look back now, what would your argument be to the China study and that book?
I think that it's a lot of cherry picked. So you're talking about me as like a meat eater now.
Yeah.
Right.
We've moved past that period in our life.
I think that it's a lot of cherry picked information. And I think that a lot of what truly makes us sick, and a lot of these studies that say the China study draws on, it's on diets where people are, okay, you're eating meat and dairy, but you're also eating a ton of other things like seed oils, vegetable oils, refined sugar and flours, a ton of other things in your diet that cause diseases and that cause suboptimal health that are eaten along with the meat and dairy. And that's what I think a lot of those studies have been done on. And when you, like, basically my point is I don't think a study has been done where somebody was just eating meat and dairy and eggs and showed how healthy they are at the end of that versus a diet where somebody is eating like processed foods. Cause it's been like so long since I did read the China study. I just remember like the premise was that it proved that if you eat a diet of 10% of animal products or less, it's conductive and not in preventing those health issues like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the data that it draws on is basically on diets like the standard American diet, where your diet isn't just like clean meat, clean eggs, and clean dairy products.
Well, and for me, I think it's interesting because he says China study, when all it is a statistical analysis. It's the preliminaries to a study. This is what you would submit to somebody to say, hey, I would like funding to actually do a study so we can test these things. But it never really seemed to test these things other than a couple lab rats that he gave interest, like that he didn't even give protein to. It didn't pan out well for the people on the other side of the study.
Okay.
So when we were in the hospital for 7 days, we get out, inflammation's going away. When do we look at meat as our go-to?
So when I was initially diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, my doctors, who were not in any way vegan, they did confuse me because they told me also that red meat and dairy aggravate ulcerative colitis. So they basically made me feel like I was a step ahead in dealing with this disease. So it took me still like 4 years after being diagnosed with that to finally come to the conclusion that maybe I needed to try meat and dairy again. And that was because I had been exposed to this argument before, but I think I was in a position where I could just brush it under the table and not think about it really.
Yeah.
But because last May I was going back into another bad flare, I was just desperate at the time. And also this was after COVID. So yeah. I did not want to have to go back to the hospital because I knew too, like my family wouldn't even be able to go in with me if you know, I needed to. So I was desperate at this point. And I happened to read like a 2-paragraph, I was reading a book about current events. I don't even remember what it was at this point, but it just mentioned, it had this very small section about veganism because I think the author had tried veganism.
Yeah.
And he basically came to the conclusion that it was not optimal for health. And he talked about how a vegan diet lacking cholesterol and collagen completely is very bad for your tissues, for your brain health. And that was when the light bulb went off for me, like maybe I need to just try including animal products again to see if it will help my gut heal. And lo and behold, as soon as I started, I had bone broth again initially.
Okay.
After like 2 weeks, it started to significantly help.
So we're having bone broth. What, and then when did we say, hey, we're going to add in some like red meat, or was it chicken? What did we start with?
I had bone broth, I would say, for about 2 weeks to a month, and it went really well. So it gave me the confidence to add in dairy and eggs. I had a very slow approach, which is not how I usually do things. So I really did want to make sure that it was the right thing to do. So I would say I included eggs and fish again after a month of the bone broth. And then after about 2 months, I added in chicken and turkey again. And then beef was like the scariest thing for me to eat again. So it took me a full like 6 months, I think, to reintroduce beef. I started eating organ meats around that time as well. I started experimenting with having like beef tallow.
Okay.
And that especially, I saw a huge improvement in my skin when I started including that. And what else there was? Oh, and I started experimenting with having dairy again because I finally realized maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought.
So the dairy, is that going to be raw dairy? Like where are we sourcing this from?
I started out just having grass-fed dairy. I think the first thing that I had again was like Kerrygold cheese, or maybe like grass-fed milk. That's probably more likely. I probably had grass-fed milk first. I did start buying raw milk when I could. It's just not something I can source very often.
Yeah.
But I will never go buy Kraft cheese singles and eat those. I'm never going to. It's always like either organic cheese or grass-fed or raw when I can get it. Mm-hmm. I have raw milk when I can. Otherwise, it's always either organic or grass-fed.
Yeah, I had allergy tests done when I was a kid, and I was allergic to everything, like dust, cat, dander, just anything that you could think of, including wheat, soy, and corn. But when they tested me for a gluten allergy, lactose, they said, no, you're not allergic to it. So for the next like 10, 15 years, I would always drink a bunch of milk, but I would still get my allergic reaction, which was like a runny nose and stuffed up and stuff like that. So when I think I turned 22, I stopped drinking milk. That went away right away because I had cleaned up my diet, but I was always drinking milk because I'm like, this is good for me and I can have it. But I recently started drinking raw milk and no issue. And I'm like, this is fantastic. So
yeah,
studying on myself, I am not a scientist, but I think there's something wrong with all that other milk.
Yeah, I agree. I do have pasteurized milk, obviously, because I don't get raw milk very often, but like I do only do raw cheese now, actually, okay. too. So I think that it's definitely better than pasteurized.
So how did your YouTube channel go when you told them that you were going away from the veganism?
So I think that it's better that I did it this way, but it's two completely separate platforms. Okay. Essentially, going back to what I was talking about earlier with my writing, I had already transitioned that YouTube channel into talking more about like just, you know, like kind of non-serious conspiracy theories and stuff, like, because I've always been interested in stuff like that. So that channel is untouched with this whole other aspect of my life. And okay. I do want to keep it that way because I don't necessarily think like the people on that channel want to be presented with like, you know, this,
yeah,
these ideas about diet. Like they just don't care. Like they're not there for that reason. So I never did have that backlash happen because of a prior platform that I had and like completely switching it around. I can't even imagine because I get enough hate from vegans as it is, not having that in the past, like attached to me. Yeah. So, but yeah, I didn't experience that.
So do you have a urge like from your old friends that are vegans or anything like that? Or when you talk to vegans, do you feel like, hey, like, can we talk about this? Has there been any success there?
Every once in a while. So the people in my personal life that I know, I just don't get into it. If they wanted to talk about it, I would be more than willing. But yeah. I've always, even when I was vegan, I was never the type to try to shove it in anybody's face or act like everybody should eat the way I do. I never had that attitude. So I have the same approach with the way I eat now. But online, every once in a while, I will have a productive conversation with somebody who is vegan or thinks it, or just doesn't understand why I would hate veganism so much, which I don't. I'm just honest yeah. about my experience with eating that way. Like a few days ago, I did have somebody who initially criticized the way I was eating. And then I mentioned like, well, you know, I healed my autoimmune disorder eating the way I eat now. So I can only conclude veganism was wrong for me. And they actually, when they responded to me, they were very curious and they were like, you know, I've never even heard that eating animal products could heal gut issues. And I was like, you know, let me tell you, you have no idea. And it actually was a more productive conversation. So it does happen, but for the most part, I find that vegans are just very closed off and they're more likely to just ridicule and, you know, attempt to tear you down rather than try to hear what you're saying.
As far as the whole animals part of like, hey, we're killing animals, so on and so forth. What is your thought around on that argument from vegans?
I think that a vegan diet doesn't save animals, honestly, because when it comes to agriculture practices and pesticides, you're killing animals to protect crops. You're killing animals when you harvest the crops. So vegans have this very warped perception of the fact that their diet doesn't kill animals also. And it just doesn't kill them in the same way that like slaughtering an animal to eat it does. But it's still like, I do plan to make a YouTube video about this in the future. So I was looking at the statistics one day and it's billions of animals that are slaughtered to eat, but there's also billions of animals that are killed during agricultural practices.
Right.
So vegans do also tend to come back with the argument of, oh, well, most crops are for animal feed anyway, but I think that's a very botched statistic. I don't think that's even true. And the thing too, is that if you eat grass-fed cows, they're eating grass. Like they're not eating, they're not eating crops that are, you know, that are given to them. They're just eating the grass. So yeah, it's that, that's the argument that I go back to though, is that a vegan diet is not bloodless either. It's still killing animals, just not in the way that you think.
Right. And as far as energy goes and all those types of things, how are we feeling now?
I feel so much better on a daily basis. So my ulcerative colitis, I would say like all of the severe symptoms healed. I still do deal with like minor digestive issues like diarrhea, but it's gotten so much better to the point where I like forget that I ever had colitis okay. or had gut issues. So that's gotten significantly better. My skin also, I think especially because of the ulcerative colitis and because of losing so much weight and nutrients at that point, I started to really prematurely age. My skin luckily bounced back and it looks, I would say like 5 to 10 years younger than it did at this time last year. I can eat and just get right to what I need to get to during the day. My energy doesn't dip. My sleep is better. Also, I fall asleep much easier at night. My oral health improved. My gums no longer bleed anymore. Luckily, I've never had a cavity. I somehow avoided the really bad dental issues.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know how I avoided that as vegan, because now hearing the stories of people, like horror stories that people have had with their teeth, I luckily avoided all of that. But my gums used to bleed pretty severely. That did go away. My teeth feel like more dense. They just feel like a lot healthier. They look less translucent. And my hair was thinning towards the end of veganism. My hair also has started to go back to normal. It's a lot thicker. Like I could see like baby hairs coming in. So, and it's growing a lot faster too, like almost to the point that it's kind of annoying.
I wish I could say carnivore has helped me, but we're too late. So when you're looking back at it as far as like a path where we've been and where we are now, how did the mental health go? Because that was a big part for those 10 years. Like, how has that been going since?
My mental health, it's like night and day. I just have like a general sense of well-being now. And even like right now, I am working on the sequel to my first book. I can really just sit down and work on it. I used to get pretty bad, like, because I had such bad brain fog, I would go through periods of time where I would sit down and like not be able to write anything because I just couldn't think. And luckily that doesn't happen to me anymore. Really, I could just sit down and write usually whenever I want. I can focus so much better. And because of all of these other things improving, I feel like all of those combine to have made my mental health like tremendously better.
Mm-hmm. As far as the book goes, is it going off of the last premise? Do we have a new one? What's going on there?
Yeah, it goes. So the first book ends on a cliffhanger. It starts right at the end of the last book.
And do you have inspiration for those? Is that just something where we just like sit down and like we hope it comes to us? Like how does that process work?
I would say it's a lot of just building off what did happen in the first book. There have been new influences that have inspired my writing now. Like Stranger Things actually has been a pretty heavy inspiration, but my characters are a lot older than the characters in Stranger Things. So, you know, more mature situations happen. Unless you're like a big reader, you probably haven't heard of this, but there's this author, Nelson DeMille, who has a series of books about this character, John Corey, who's an FBI agent. And he's like a very like funny character, and he gets into all of these different situations, like it's a whole book series. So those books have kind of inspired what I write now. But I mean, this book I'm working on now is more serious than the first one, but like the first one I've always described as Stranger Things meets a Cinderella story.
Okay.
So it's kind of like building off the first book, as I said, but just it's more like mature than the first book, because I did write it when I was a lot earlier in my 20s as well.
Gotcha. So we transitioned. I had a question. I forgot it. It came back to me.
Okay.
So what would we classify our eating style as now? Like, are we full carnivore? What are we doing?
I would say almost full carnivore. I feel like some of the labels are kind of silly, but like hyper carnivore would be the best way of describing the way that I'm eating. I do go back and forth though with, like, I will have days where I just eat like just straight animal products, but I have been experimenting with having a little bit of fruit juice again. So I've been having like cold pressed grapefruit juice.
Okay.
Just to see if that might help with performance, because I do work out like 5 days a week and I honestly haven't really noticed a difference. So It's honestly more so too, just because I do like the taste. But for the most part, most days I am just doing like a full like animal based diet, like just animal products with a very small amount of fruit. And I do want to try having avocados again because I miss them, honestly. But I'm a little scared, honestly, because of the fact that, like, I don't want fiber to start to re-aggravate my gut. So that's, like, kind of where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. So to the people that don't have, like, an autoimmune issue and stuff like that, so for myself, I have allergies to a lot of things, so it's easier for me to stick with it. Do you suggest they kind of ease into the carnivore lifestyle? Should they be strict, or is it kind of more personal?
I think I would never recommend the like cold turkey method that I have tended to use with a lot of things in my life. So I think easing into it is probably going to be best for most people. And really, what I always go back to is that if you want to start to improve your health and include more animal products, focus on like unprocessed animal products, like just straight meat that has nothing on it. Like if you do want to add anything to it, you know what you're adding.
Yeah.
So like unprocessed meat products, unprocessed dairy, if you can tolerate it, and like unprocessed egg products, just straight eggs without like seed oils and vegetable oils and refined sugars and flours, like take those out of your diet at least and focus on whole animal foods, because that alone, I think, can only make whoever's eating that way start to feel better.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Before we get into the last couple of questions, where do we see our life going now as far as like as an author? Are we going to try to do that full time, or what are we looking for down the road?
So I do want to do something more with what I've found in the carnivore community, but it's like finding the right thing for me. I did kind of just happen upon this platform accidentally. I never knew it was going to go as well as it has been. So I do want to do more with it, but I am in the stage right now of figuring out what that is.
Yeah.
So there's that. I do want to do something more, but I don't know what yet. And then I am going to be publishing my second book, and like, hopefully I think I have a lot of experience from the way I released the first book to know what not to do and what to do.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll go a little bit better than the first one. Because I did get like a couple hundred sales, but I feel like I know how to do it now to hopefully get it out there a little bit more.
Okay.
But yeah, that's where I'm at right now. I hope that the second book goes a little better than the first one. And I would love to be able to do it full time, but it's like just getting to that place where I can, hopefully.
Awesome. So where would people follow you, and where would they find your books?
They can find my carnivore related stuff on Instagram and YouTube. I'm called the X Plant Eater on both platforms. And my books are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The first one is called Finding Anephora. The second one is to be announced. I don't know when it's going to be out yet, but it's called Finding Anephora, and it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And you can get them in Kindle and paperback.
Awesome. So we'll finish up with the last two questions. What's your definition of health? Not necessarily the dictionary definition, but what is health to you?
My view of health since I did stop being vegan is basically just being able to approach each day with a clear mind and not even having to think about the way your body feels, because you just feel great, and being able to go about your life in that sort of a state where you don't have to be bogged down by health issues. I think that's really where we get to our healthiest, when we never even have to think about what we're, you know, like about like feeling in a suboptimal way, like feeling like you have aches and pains, or feeling like gut issues, like the complete absence of those things. Basically, that's what health is for me at this point.
I love that. And then what's something from your life that you think people listening to the podcast would be able to take away as a positive?
I think humility and being able to admit that you were wrong, especially when it comes down to something that you hold so close, that's almost like a part of your identity, being able to let go of something like that, in my experience, has only been rewarding. And it was the scariest thing I ever did at the time that I did stop being vegan, because it was something that I thought I would be for the rest of my life. And as scary as it was initially letting go of that, I have only been rewarded since I did let go of it. But, you know, it's kind of like a leap of faith initially that you have to take sometimes to do the right thing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.